Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear about the legislative panel that took testimony about whether grocery and convenience stores should be able to sell cold beer. Eric Weddle talks about three Indiana universities that made the top U.S. 100 list. And director of Art House, Arlene Peterson, was on regionally speaking with host Chris Nolte on Wednesday, September 13th, to talk about her remarkable project. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. It's an air show of a different kind. Plus, there will be candy. The city of Hammond is hosting its 12th annual remote-controlled air show at the Gene Shepherd Community Center on Saturday, September 23rd from noon to 3 p.m. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson has more.
The candy drop is for the kids. Gene Shepherd Community Center employee Sheila Colvin says the event is completely for fun.
We do have a bigger plane that the gentleman takes outside, and they put candy in, and it's a candy drop for the kids. He does about maybe three or four of those throughout the show.
The people who are operating the remote-controlled planes are enthusiasts. Colvin says they fly at the center regularly.
The guys usually come here once a week at the Shepherd, and they fly, and then once a year they do the annual RC pilot show.
The event, which also includes a static display, the piloting of some drones, and a helicopter, is being hosted by the Midwest RC Pilots and is free for everyone. Call 219-554-0155 for more information. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Sharon Jackson.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Indiana Democrat Joe Donnelly was one of just six U.S. senators invited to a White House dinner to discuss President Trump's tax reform agenda. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports political analysts say Donnelly's inclusion is a boost to his reelection campaign.
In a statement, Senator Joe Donnelly called the dinner a good conversation and focused on his proposal to address outsourced jobs. Congressman Todd Rokita, one of the Republicans vying to oust Donnelly, blasted his presence at the dinner. Rokita's campaign continues to argue Donnelly merely pretends to be bipartisan. Political analyst Andrew Downs says Rokita's strategy can be effective, but also easy to refute.
There are official scores out there that show he is one of the most moderate members or bipartisan members of the current crop of folks who are serving us in D.C.
And Downs says Donnelly's Republican opponents are likely angry at the president's invitation because Downs notes it was likely unnecessary.
If what Trump wants to do lines up well with what Republicans want to do, he doesn't really need to talk to a lot of Democrats, and he certainly doesn't need to give one in a hotly contested race center stage like this.
President Trump invited three Democrats and three Republicans to what the White House called the highly productive discussion. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Business and political leaders in the Indianapolis area announced Monday, September 11th, that the city will make a proposal for Amazon's next headquarters. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports the group has 30 days to submit their proposal to the tech giant.
Indianapolis meets the basic criteria. It has a metro population of nearly 2 million people with access to a major airport and highways. Amazon wants a 100-acre greenfield site and 500,000 square feet of existing buildings to start with. Jay Walters of Fishers-based site selection company Fairwinds Advisors says Indianapolis could meet those real estate needs.
The disadvantage is going to be the talent pool that they have to draw from.
Amazon wants to hire 50,000 people at the new HQ, including lots of engineers. Walters says that makes recreational options and quality of life paramount.
I'm assuming a lot of these workers are going to be recent grads, and there again, it's just kind of harder. Not that it's impossible, but I think it's a challenge for a company to recruit them here.
He says Indy might do better once the tech industry matures and workers start to want somewhere to raise families. Cities that have said they'll bid on the project include Denver, Kansas City, Toronto, Baltimore, Chicago, and Pittsburgh. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Annie Ropeek.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Three Indiana universities made the top 100 in U.S. News & World Report's latest annual higher education rankings. WFYI and IPBS's Eric Weddle reports there are no big surprises in the 2018 list.
The University of Notre Dame remains the highest-ranked institution in the state. It tied for 18th place in the Best National Universities category. That's down slightly. Last year, it held the 15th spot. Around the state, Purdue University's West Lafayette campus came in at 56th place, and Indiana University Bloomington is 90th. Ball State University and IUPUI made the top 200. U.S. News considers a range of benchmarks to calculate the list, from the quality of faculty to graduation rates. For the seventh year in a row, Princeton University sits atop the national ranking. One institution placed very well in the ranking of engineering programs. Rose Holman Institute of Technology and Terre Haute tied for first place. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Weddle.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. A legislative panel tasked with rewriting the state's alcohol laws took testimony Monday, September 11th, on one of the most controversial topics the group plans to tackle: whether grocery and convenience stores should be able to sell cold beer. The arguments, though, were the same they've been for years, as the General Assembly has repeatedly debated the issue. Supporters of the change say it would allow convenience store owners to adapt to a changing market. The convenience chain Rickers sparked this year's debate when it secured restaurant permits that allow cold beer and hard liquor for carryout. Its owner, Jay Ricker, says cementing the change would remove a legalized monopoly. Some opponents to the change say selling cold beer in more places would lead to increased crime, and some argue it would make it easier for underage drinkers to get access to beer. You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. John Kane, host of Eye in the Arts, talks with Kevin Bellamy, director of administration at the Tau Theater, about the current running of Hypnosis.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Kevin Bellamy, who is director of administration at the Tau Theater in Hammond. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you.
You have been on the stage ever so many times at the Tau Theater and many other places as well.
Yeah, actually over about 100 times.
I was going to ask, have you kept track of how many?
I did.
When did you do your first show?
Second grade. Oh, you mean at the Tau?
Well, I was a grown-up, you know, like when when you were off on your own.
Probably after college then, I guess.
Yeah.
I did it up and through high school and then through college also, but more steady after college.
100 shows. Yeah. More than 100.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So are you in the next one at
Tau
Theater?
I am not.
Hypnosis, it's called, right?
Correct.
And, well, give us a little summary of what it's about.
Well, it's about a washed-up stage hypnotist, and he unknowingly picks an audience member who is one of the cast members, Alan, to be in his stage show. Everyone has a good laugh at his expense. Everyone goes home. Everything seems fine. Alan, the gentleman who was under on stage, has other ideas for the stage hypnotist, which I don't want to give too much away, but it involves possibly robbing a bank.
Is it a revenge plot?
No, it's a greed plot.
A greed plot.
And the stage hypnotist and the wife kind of have a collusion. The stage hypnotist and the husband have a collusion, the wife and the husband. So it's kind of cat and mouse and finding out who wins in the end.
And it's comedy and drama combined,
correct?
Right? Yeah. And it's so it's psychological.
Yes.
Is it a thriller?
We call it a comedic thriller.
A comedic thriller. Well, that's a good title for it. And Mark Baer from IU Northwest is directing, right?
That is correct.
And has Mark done other work with you?
Yes. He directed Nightmare Room a couple seasons ago and also Perfect Wedding.
And this show is going to be opening when?
We open September 8th, and it runs through September 24th.
Okay. So how many performances? Is that like 9 performances?
10.
10, okay.
Yeah. We do one Thursday night also.
Oh, yeah. You have your educator night.
Yeah. Industry night.
Industry night.
Yes.
I knew you called it something. how large is this? A small cast? Just the three characters?
Just the three.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I like that Woody Allen movie that came out, I don't know, like what, 3 or 4 summers ago. Well, 3 or 4 years ago, and Colin Firth played. It was a similar kind of a thing where there was a magician, and it was more like vaudeville era. It was in Britain. It was in London, maybe. didn't seem British to me at the time.
This one is British, too, so.
Oh, they all seem – you know, they do good psychological comedic thrillers, so there you go. What else is going on at the Toll these days?
Well, after we close Hypnosis, we will open Heathers, the musical high school edition with our Toll Youth Theater Ensemble, mm-hmm. which will run in October, the mm-hmm. last two weekends in October, and that is based on the 1980s Heathers movie.
Heathers movie.
Did you ever see it?
No.
Winona Ryder, Christian Slater. Oh, it's a cult classic.
I see. It's not a cult that has been on my radar. A cult experience I've missed. You know, a lot of cult experiences I miss. I'm so out of that loop.
It kind of deals with bullying and high school cliques and the hierarchy in high school and revenge.
Oh, that sounds perfect for your young people's group. Yeah. Oh, that sounds fun. How many kids will be involved in that?
20.
Oh, my gosh.
Big cast.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun, though. That gives a lot of – so the young people who are involved in your group, where do they come from? All over?
All over. We've got kids from Chicago, Crown Point, Valpo, Munster, Griffith, Highland. Uh-huh.
And how often do they get together to rehearse?
They will rehearse probably 3 to 4 nights a week.
Mm, wow. So that's quite a commitment.
Yeah, it is.
Schlepping to downtown Hammond all that many times. And then you've got is Hypnosis your last main stage show of the year?
Yes.
And then you have the fabulous 50s Christmas.
Correct.
And you used to be in that once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Do you still do it some years?
No.
No, not so much?
Mm-mm. No, it's a lot to handle being on stage and doing everything else.
Oh, so. It is. You guys, you and Jeff do a really great job there.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Kevin, thank you for being here to tell us about Hypnosis. And we'll have you or Jeff back sometime soon to talk about what's going to come up in 2018.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. About 2.5 years ago, it was just an idea in the mind of Chicago entrepreneur Theodore Gates, a single building in the city of Gary that is a kitchen, a classroom, a cultural center, and an art gallery. Today, Art House, a social kitchen, is a very busy venue to which artists and Northwest Indiana residents can turn for progressive opportunities to collaborate. The director of Art House, Arlene Peterson, was on Regionally Speaking on Wednesday to talk about this remarkable project made possible in part by the City of Gary's very first Cities Challenge grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Here's that conversation.
I think some of the great vision that Theaster brought to the table, also the synergy and energy of Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson, those two individuals coming together and really thinking differently about what can we do to help reignite and make Gary a place where folks want to continue to come, where businesses can begin to thrive, and you start to bring a bit of the local flavor and local feel for what's going to happen in the community. And the opportunities of the Night City Challenges came about, which was really about how can we create an incubator type program that's going to support economic development in the city. Along with that was the Bloomberg Philanthropies Public Art Challenge, was mm-hmm. how can we, you know, infuse money into a community and help them do something that they probably wouldn't think to maybe pay for or have the money or funding to do something different, which the Public Art Challenge, which really was a part of that. Hence the birth of Art House, a Social Kitchen. It's truly a place for culture, art, food, and we even say fun mm-hmm. for the community to come together. It's a gathering place. It's a place where you can taste different kind of foods that may be happening with different vendors in the community. It really is a place to showcase art in a various forms that could be happening in the community. And so it really is this incredible idea of food, art, coming together and using a space to create kind of public art pieces that are displayed not only on the outside of the building, but on the inside of the building.
Now, the building itself is very impressive, especially at night with the lighting that's set up out there. I have not seen it personally, but I have seen photos of what it looks like at night. And when you go to our website, when you check out Regionally Speaking podcast later, you'll see a picture, the daytime picture, unfortunately, of what the art house looks like. The nighttime picture is just as impressive, if not more so, because it's a building that will capture the imagination. You can think all kinds of things about that building just by driving by at night when the lights are all on. The idea for the building itself is obviously it's a combination of services. It's the art gallery. It's the culinary incubator, which is something that's very important in its own right. And you say that's kind of been able to help grow over the last couple of years or so. And then this community meeting space. It's in an unusual spot, at least for any other meeting space other than sports events. And the reason I say that is because it's right across the street on Fifth Street from the U.S. Steel Yard, which is, of course, where the Railcats play baseball. So you see this big baseball stadium on one side and see this little very flashy-looking building, almost like made out of aluminum foil, on the other side of the street. When the designs were put together to create this building, did they have that in mind to have some facility that would contrast with the brickiness and the starkness of the baseball stadium?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was this idea of there are tons of people that are coming to Railcat Stadium, participating in games and enjoying their time there. What else can we continue to keep to attract and keep them there? And so when I first started with the program, you would see people come to the baseball games and they would walk on by. Now when they come to the games, they actually stop, they look, they're taking pictures. And again, it's that infusion of this public art piece, these lanterns. They're solar lanterns. They light up when the sun is shining really bright, and in the evening time, they'll light up at nighttime. They really create such a twinkle and a sparkle to, I think, the downtown area, and it just draws people's attention into what the space is.
Arlene, take us through the components of the entire project, starting out first with the culinary program, since we seem to know it first, and it's become predominantly that of this culinary incubator, which is only a very small part of this entire culinary program. Tell us about that.
Oh, so what they wanted to do, the Culinary Business Incubator Program, is really designed to work with individuals who have that culinary artistic ability to be able to cook food. They may have a really great product that maybe they've been cooking out of their home, but really want to expand and grow their product development. So the Culinary Business Incubator Program, which our first class, which was in March of this year, we had 24 participants who came, you know, on Saturdays, 4 hours worth of classroom training and instruction, were supported by Food Hero Program, Arts and Public Life with the University of Chicago, just learning about what does it take to take what may be my idea around culinary art and actually really hone in the business aspects of it. They use business model canvassing as a kind of core component to the training to really kind of teach people, you know, how can you take that business plan, which may be this written document, but really to visualize how does that affect your customers? How does it affect the products that you have? So we had 24 absolutely incredible individuals who came out and have really kind of grown and developed in terms of their business abilities. Prime example would be California Jones, a group, individual, husband and wife team, have a catering business. They came in, took the Culinary Business Incubator class. We then were able to partner with them and a local youth program, City Life Center there in Gary, Indiana. And during the summer, we're able to provide breakfast and lunch, hot breakfast and hot lunches every day during the summer time for these individuals. So this allowed California Jones, which is a new, you know, new business really starting out, to be able to come in and utilize this full commercial kitchen, which there's over 3,000 square feet of commercial kitchen space available for a culinary artist to come in and be able to kind of, again, work on the product and help them to mass produce the product that they're working with. And to be able to see that in action is truly, I think, the power of what Art House has to available to a budding culinary entrepreneur.
Are they finding, and did they find when they went through their courses set up there at the Culinary Incubator, that is, there's quite a difference between having a great idea and then crafting a business plan so you can turn that great idea into a business, and then actually following through and getting to work with actual equipment, where maybe before you might have just kind of tinkered around in the kitchen with an idea, and you've got to push it that next extra step to make it actually an idea that is saleable.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it really it helps them to really think about the type of products. You know, maybe they had a menu that had 10 items on it. No, we're going to actually change it to 5 because they've really figured out how to maybe mass produce or take those 5 items and really make them their signature products. And so that's been one of the great things about seeing the evolution of coming in, taking classes, but now you're really honing on your business, honing on your customers, and being able to really identify how can I make myself unique. And then eventually, the goal is always that they start in that culinary kitchen there at Art House, and eventually maybe they get a food truck, and then maybe eventually they get a brick and mortar. Again, being able to establish some of that economic development that's needed there in the city.
Now tell us, Arlene, where the social kitchen fits into all of this. Now, we've talked about the culinary incubator, so we get people that are interested in taking an idea for a great culinary idea and turning it into an actual business, or seeing certainly through the process whether it's going to work or not. Where does the social kitchen fit into things now?
It comes in as now we have a place for people to gather, and when we can gather around food, that makes it even better. And so we have programs in our culinary and arts exploration program. These are programs that are culinary based, or they could be art based, and we host them there at Art House free of charge, invite the entire public to come out and participate in those programs, and it really becomes this social place where folks can come and gather, talk, meet, and greet. So we've had programs from a senior seasons blues show, where we had a blues show just for senior citizens in the community. We had a cupcake wars, where it was about families coming out and battling and tasting different kind of cupcakes that we've had. We've had a meal prep series where we had a young woman with Enjoy Eats come in and really talk about how do you help families to prepare healthy meals in the busy times that we have. We've had J-Rock's Gourmet Popcorn, a 12-year-old entrepreneur coming in and talking about what does it take for me as a 12-year-old to create a business around food and being able to teach that skill to other people in the community. So we've had more than 60 different culinary and art exploration programs since November of last year that have been there at the Art House in our social kitchen area.
Wow.
And we've had more than 1,000 individuals that have come into the building and participated in one of those programs. So that right there is that catalyst of what Art House is in terms of bringing culture, art, and food and people to gather socially and to get to know who your neighbors are and what's happening in the community.
When the idea of Art House was created, obviously you've got the kitchen idea, which was something that was very important because the city of Gary had the opportunity to, I think, here to turn something into a good opportunity to create businesses, which the city needs and still always will need, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But then you've got this art gallery concept too. There aren't many ideas that kind of blossom into putting food and art together into one facility here. What kind of response have you gotten with just the art gallery alone now?
With just the art gallery, I think we are really exploring a lot more opportunities around the art. There are tons of people who have photographs of the city of Gary and its heyday. There are visual artists who are out there, young people who are artists in the local schools. We're really trying to bring those folks into the fold to really start to showcase them. And probably one of our up-and-coming events that we're having is our Gospel Mosaic, where we're going to bring in local artists to come in and do some painting. And during that time of painting, we'll also bring in artists to perform gospel music, but a variety from a quartet to a choir to an individual, but to really be able to feature a variety of different folks. Again, it's that bringing together of all these kind of different kind of people and individuals and displays of art, but having a place and a venue for that to happen there in the city of Gary.
In the last 2.5 years since Theaster Gates' vision for Art House blossomed into the request to create the application for the grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, that in turn, of course, led to receiving the first City of Gary Cities Challenges grant. What kind of recognition or at least interest have you gotten from outside Gary about this particular project? And that I understand that some of that interest comes not only in other communities interested in it, but also the media, too.
I definitely think we've had some interest out of Indianapolis with Centric Innovations, doing some business workshops there we have at Art House. We've worked very wonderfully with Work One, the City of Gary, and employment opportunities. Currently, right now at Art House, we have an incredible retail fundamentals class that's happening with individuals in the community to teach them about the retail trade and get training and certification in that particular area. A lot of interest from just across the board, Chicago, all over the place, that want to come in and be able to provide additional workshops or supports to really help the community to grow.
And I understand one of the most recent articles that's come out online, and I guess it's in a trade magazine. It's called Curbed. It's a magazine that's put out for urban planners. Mm-hmm. It's a national magazine, but the idea is that they like to look at different projects all across the country. The City of Gary was prominently displayed in one of the recent online articles, not only about the City of Gary's problems and how they've come through working them out, but also, too, talking about Art House. How does Art House fit into all of this from Curb's standpoint?
I think with Art House, we are one of those catalysts in terms of when you're thinking about planning for a city or planning for development in a city, you have to think about public art and think about it in a different kind of way as a draw to bring people into the community. You have to think about culinary arts and how are you going to, you know, when people come, they want to be able to eat. And so how are you going to make sure that you have a variety of places and venues and food options for folks that want to come into your community. And I really think Art House has just been one of those catalysts. There are probably at least 3 new restaurants in the city of Gary that are now very popular, and people know that they can come and participate in those places there. So it's been amazing to just see this new venue and this new space really blossom, and we're just one part of all the things that can and should be happening in the city of Gary.
Now, if anybody would like to know more about Art House, what's the website address so people can check it out and find out more about, especially if they want to be involved in either the Culinary Incubator or some of the other programs?
It is arthousegary.com. Again, arthousegary.com.
For Lakeshore Update, I'm Chris Nolte.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure to search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.